Thank you, Alan, very much indeed. It's really good to be here with you this evening. And the first thing I want to do is acknowledge as well the very difficult days, obviously, that you're in at the moment, and to thank God as well publicly for John's ministry as church warden over such a long time, and the real way that he's served you and this parish and indeed this village. And as a senior staff, we've been praying for you daily, and we will continue to do that. And I pledge ongoing support for you in any way that we possibly can. I also want to say a huge thanks to Alan and to Jenny for the last 23 years that they've given of their lives in the service of Christ here amongst you. And I think it's been absolutely outstanding, all that they've done together with you. Sure, it's not just them, it's you as the community of faith, but absolutely as your leaders, your spiritual leaders under God, and want to thank them publicly as well for all they've done amongst you as they prepare to end well in difficult circumstances over the next week or so. And I know that you've got some things coming which you're going to be able to show your thanks and appreciation to them. So I do want to acknowledge that, and thank also Alan particularly for allowing this meeting to happen even while he's still here. So I do recognise that, and thank you very much indeed. So really what I want to do this evening is just simply explain to you the vacancy process that you are soon going to enter into. I want to speak for probably about 20 minutes or so, just outlining that process, and then I'm very happy to take whatever questions that you have, comments or questions that you want to ask after that. The reason I'm doing this is because I recognise that when churches are about to go into vacancy, it can be quite an unsettling and anxious time. And I found that the more information that I can give to you as you are on the verge of going into vacancy, and the more questions, the more conversation, dialogue that we can have, really, it means that everyone knows what's going on. There's nothing hidden, it's transparent, and that just eases any misunderstandings or anxiety. I've also produced a newsletter which contains most of the information, important information at least, that I'll be sharing with you this evening. And I'll ping that over to someone here, and that will be available probably this Sunday, either via email or can be printed out again. So whether people are here or not, they can take away that information. And I'm always on the other end of a telephone or an email should further questions arise in the coming weeks. So the first thing to say is that legally, we cannot do anything until you fall into vacancy. And the day that you fall into vacancy is the day after Alan formally resigns. So I recognise that his last Sunday is in a week or two's time, but he actually resigns a little bit after that. As soon as you are in vacancy, so the day after Alan has resigned, what happens in the diocese, we have someone called Sarah, who is our clergy appointments officer, who deals with all the sort of the administration around appointments and licensing of clergy in the diocese. She will send what's called a Form 30 to the diocesan registry. The registry are our solicitors, our legal team in Westminster. And that Form 30 simply states that you are now in vacancy. Once the registry have received that form, they then gather various other forms together and an information pack, and then by return, they will send those forms and the sort of information pack to Simon, your church warden. And at that point, an imaginary clock starts ticking. And I'll come back to that clock in a little while. I've also mentioned that when you go into vacancy, we can't start the legal process of appointing your new minister. And there is a legal process that we have to go through. And indeed, every parish in the country that falls into vacancy has to follow this this legal process. And this process is laid down by the very exciting legislation called the Patronage Benefices Measure 1986. So if you're interested, you can look it up, and it's all there. What that means is that there is a process to go through, and that's what I'm about to explain. Often people say, well, who's in charge when Alan has resigned? Well, the people that are in charge legally are your area dean, that's Peter Nevins, he's the incumbent in St John's North Holmwood, and Simon, your church warden. They are called the sequestrators, a bit of a legal term, but essentially they're in charge to ensure that the general mission and ministry of the church continues until you receive your new clergy person. Primarily, that's about Sunday worship continuing. And as Alan has already said, there's already a rota right up to Christmas. So you're well ahead there, and that's fantastic. But the area dean plays a particular role. He acts a little bit like being your incumbent. So that's what that's about. What we do once you've fallen into vacancy is, as I said, the registry will be notified. They will send you a whole lot of information. And then as a parish, you need to begin to put together something called a parish profile. Now, you may have heard of that in the past if you were around over 23 years ago. A parish profile is the documentation that any prospective candidate who is thinking of applying to the post here would receive to find out more about the job. So there are really three aspects to the parish profile. It's largely a descriptive piece. So in it, you will put what Westcott, Holy Trinity Westcott is like. You'll talk about your life and maybe a little bit about the history. You'll talk about your relationship with the village and the community. You'll talk a little bit about your service pattern. You'll talk a little bit about the various ministries and the different groups that are involved here at Holy Trinity. Maybe about your home groups, maybe about your children's work, maybe about different outreach initiatives that you have into the village and maybe beyond. Maybe your mission sort of aspects that you're involved in as well. So you'll talk about some of the nitty-gritty about how many weddings, baptisms and funerals you might have on average over 5 years. It's a whole descriptive piece that really brings what ministry and mission is like here in Westcott alive to someone who is thinking, I wonder, is the Lord calling me to serve here as the next minister? So there'll be plenty of words, there'll be plenty of lovely photographs, I hope, to give, you know, pictures often speak much more than words, don't they? So it'll be a great document for someone to receive. The second aspect of the parish profile is that it must contain what's called a statement of needs. And that's really you as a parish, as a PCC, saying, you know, this is what we're hoping for in the next season of ministry. Some of the descriptive piece that I've already spoken about, we'll talk about some of the joys, some of the celebrations, some of the things that have been great successes over the last season. You'll also maybe want to put some of the things that maybe have been challenging or that you've struggled with, or maybe you've wanted to do, but it's not quite worked for whatever reason. The statement of needs is really trying to say, look, this is where we are now, and as best we can, under God, this is where, as we dream dreams, as we pray together, as we seek to discern together as a PCC and a community of faith, this is the sense where we think God would like us to move to in the next season. Now, you can't be much more specific than that, but you can probably cast a vision for the next 5 years, maybe, just to give somebody who may be thinking, is the Lord calling me here? You know, do I resonate with what they're looking for, what they're hoping for in terms of the vision and mission, the direction of the church? The third aspect will be the person specification. So you've talked about what you're like, some of the successes and joys and challenges and the descriptive piece of ministry. You've talked about the statement of needs, where you hope you might want to move in what direction. And again, that may be facing challenges, that may be particular set of things that you're good at that you want to go to the next level in, as it were. And those pieces will form the person's specification. So what are some of the characteristics of the person that you're looking for to be your new minister, bearing in mind your statement of needs and the previous season of ministry? So there may be particular things. Let's say you want a particular focus on children and young people's work. You know, you've gone that really well in the past. Maybe it's been hit hard by COVID, as it has in many other parishes around the country. And maybe say, but we're still committed to doing this and we want to continue to move into that. Therefore, in your person specification, you're going to want someone who's got some experience and maybe some hands-on experience of working with children and young people, or at least sees that as a real priority and has had that as a real priority in their ministry to date. And that they can talk about that, they can give examples about that. Now, what sort of leadership style do you want in your new clergy person here? What's the sort of person that you want? So that's the person's specification. So you've got really three elements to your parish profile. And it's that document that will be uploaded to the diocesan website, and anyone who wants to apply can download it and prayerfully reflect and read over it and thinking, is this something that I think the Lord is drawing me to? The parish profile is a PCC document. But hopefully, as many people within the community of Westcott and the church can feel that they have input and a voice to it. One of the things that we offer one of our mission enablers, I think Danny Wignall, is hopefully going to come and do a bit of a vision morning or a vision evening with you, just to start the process of helping you to think about formulating the parish profile, thinking a little bit about, you know, some of the things that have gone well and maybe things that haven't gone so well, challenges, threats, risks, those sorts of things. And that sort of is a catalyst to start the process off. But I do hope that you'll invite as many voices as possible to be involved in that parish profile. Now, it is a PCC document, and what I would generally suggest is that the PCC identify just a handful of people, maybe five people or so, who are going to do the hard work, the nitty-gritty of writing it down, finding pictures, etc. You might have people who are particularly gifted with graphic design, those sorts of things, or, you know, literary people who would be a great gift on that small group. You can't do a parish profile by PCC. You need a smaller group really to do the hard work, but then it's a document that is refined by the PCC. So every so often it would go to the PCC. The PCC would look at it and say, this is looking really great. I think we've forgotten to talk about X, Y, and Z. Could we just rephrase this little bit that we've put here? And then it goes back to the working group. They do a bit more work on it and it comes back. So it's refined over a period of time until you get it just to be the document that you think it ought to be. Maybe halfway through those iterations, I will want to have a look at it. The area dean will want to have a look at it. And we will read it and reflect back and say, you know, there may be some gaps from our perspective. We think that it would be good for the parish profile to include. The profile will include a letter from Bishop Andrew, and it will include a letter from me as Archdeacon as well. That's a PCC document. That document has to be formally accepted at what's called a Section 11 meeting. And that's where I go back to my clock ticking. Remember, the clock starts to tick when the diocesan solicitors send you the information and forms. From that moment, you have 6 months by which you have to have held your Section 11 meeting. The Section 11 meeting deals with three things. It's a straightforward PCC meeting. It's a meeting that you would invite your area dean to, but he can't chair it. It has to be chaired by whoever the lay chair is. I legally am not allowed. No one from the diocese is allowed to be at that meeting. And there are three things that you do at that PCC meeting. The first thing is that you formally adopt your parish profile. So that's why it takes several months to get to this stage. When you've cut to your Section 11 meeting, it's done. You're just ratifying what you've already done over the last few months. So you agree your parish profile. The second thing you agree to do, I hope, is to advertise. You have to agree at that meeting whether you're going to advertise the post or not. I always, in the diocese, we always say, please advertise, because if you don't advertise, it's very difficult for clergy out there to know that you've got a vacancy and that you've got a job going. We'll put it on the diocesan website, absolutely. But the very best place is to advertise with the Church Times. The Church Times tends to be the go-to place for clergy as they look for posts and roles that are open to them. So I would strongly encourage you as a PCC, when you get to your Section 11 meeting, say, yes, we're going to advertise. It's your responsibility. Well, we will help you to liaise with the Church Times. You pay for the advert. There are two options. Most parishes pay for the more expensive option, which is the until filled option. It means that if you don't appoint first time round, you can resubmit the same advert again without having to pay any extra money. That's a decision for you. And we will liaise with you. I'll work with the PCC on the wording of the advert. Experience says that less is more when it comes to an advert. So the less words, the better, because the idea of an advert is to draw people in and say, no, I want to download the profile. And it also means that because it's going in a printed paper, too many words makes it too small. And we'll do some graphic work on that so it looks really good, and we'll agree that with you before your Section 11 meeting, assuming that you still decide to advertise. The third thing that you do at the Section 11 meeting is that you formally appoint, as a PCC, two parish representatives. These parish representatives will represent you as a parish on the shortlisting and interview panel. Now, quite often, where there are two wardens, it will be the wardens, but it doesn't have to be. If it's not, we would generally suggest it's one warden and maybe one other PCC member. But that's entirely for you as a PCC to decide. You may want to start talking about that before you get to your Section 11 meeting, but that's a matter for you. So those are three things that you do at your Section 11 meeting, and then that's over. You then fill in some of the forms, or the PCC secretary fills in some of the forms that the registry sent after they got notice from us that you were in vacancy. We'll then, assuming you've agreed to advertise, we will then liaise on your behalf. Sarah will liaise with the Church Times, make sure that it's advertised for 4 Fridays. It'll go on the Church Times website as well for that duration. It'll go on our diocesan website. If there are other networks that you're involved with, like New Wine or other networks, you could also ask them to advertise it. The more the merrier, really. The more networks you can get it out on, the more the word you can get out, the wider the net is cast, and that's always, I think, a really good thing to do. So we've gone for advert. Clearly the advert will have a closing date. All the applicants will apply to the diocese directly, to Sarah. And then when the closing date comes, then all the applications will be sent to the shortlisting and interview panel. So let me explain who's going to be on the shortlisting and interview panel. Every parish in the country has a patron. It's a historical thing that's been around for centuries. The role of the patron of a parish is that they present to the bishop the person that they want to be the new minister here. And they say, Bishop, this is the person I want you to license to this parish. And then the bishop licenses them. Now, in your case, your patron is Bishop Andrew. So although it sounds a bit weird, Bishop Andrew will present whoever it is to himself, asking him to license whoever it is, and he'll do that. Because Bishop Andrew is the patron, it just makes things a little bit less complicated. But your patron is going to be on the shortlisting panel and the interview panel. I'm just checking. And what Bishop Andrew does, he takes it in turns with Bishop Joe. And they just take, you know, they do it in sequence. One does one, the one does the next. And Bishop Joe will be representing Bishop Andrew on your shortlisting and interview panel. So she'll be acting on behalf of Bishop Andrew as the patron. So Bishop Joe will be on the shortlisting interview panel. I will be on that panel as well as your archdeacon. And Peter Nevins will be on that panel as well as your area dean. And then your two parish representatives who you formally approved of and adopted at the Section 11 meetings. There'll be five of us who will receive all those applications. We will then have a shortlisting meeting. And we would tend to call, we'll only call to interview those whom we sense God may be calling. The whole of this process is a discernment process, undergirded by prayer. Of course, you'll be praying, we'll be praying, and it's all about seeking the Lord and discerning who he may be calling. And of course, the candidates will be praying and seeking to discern from their end as well. So we would typically want to interview between 3 and 4 candidates. So let's say we got 10 applicants. There'll be some who just aren't right. We don't want to waste people's time. We only want to interview those who we think could be the very best fit here for you. That's what we're about. We're about finding the best fit for you in terms of the individual and in what you're looking for and you as a parish. So 3 or 4 people, at a push, we could go to 5. We will then have an interview date, probably a few weeks later. We'll write to all the successful candidates who are bringing to interview. And then we will work out with you an interview process. And we normally takes about 24 hours over 2 days. So on the first day, we would often invite the candidates to come maybe here after lunch, meet in the afternoon. And then they would be shown around the village. They'd be given a tour around the area, around the parish. They'd be given the opportunity individually to, have a look at the vicarage. But the vicarage will not be the vicarage they're moving to. And I'll come on to that. And you may want to ask me about that in a moment. So we will show them what probably the intention is. We'll talk to them certainly about the intention about how we're going to house them into the interim until the brand new vicarage is built. We would get them to have a look around the church and stuff like that. Familiarise themselves, because what this is all about is helping the candidates to discern, is this the right place? Could this be the right place that the Lord is calling me to? Maybe over a cup of tea, we'd really encourage maybe a small gathering of members of the community and maybe key members of the church who are not part of the PCC, just to meet the candidates. So head teachers, you know, any other significant people within the village, regardless of whether they are involved in church life or not, and maybe particular key people within the life of the church, to have tea with them. Again, that's an opportunity primarily for the candidates to ask questions. It's not an opportunity for the home team, as it were, to grill the candidates. That comes the next day with the formal interview. And there may be one or two other people that they might want to meet just one-to-one, for example. And then in the evening, what we've generally tended to do is had a PCC meal, bring and share meal. We invite the candidates to, and the candidates, you know, round tables, and then, you know, in between courses or whatever, the candidates move around and sit at another table. Again, the whole purpose for that is for the candidates to meet people and to ask questions. It's all about enabling them to discern. Clearly, there'll be conversations, but it's not an opportunity for PCC members to grill a candidate. Then they go to bed. And what we like to do is we like to hear from PCC members just about their thoughts and reflections off the back of that PCC meal. And so what we invite people, PCC members, to do, without talking to each other about it, is if they want to reflect or let the interview panel hear their reflections of that evening and the candidates they've met, we ask them that evening, without talking to anybody else, to email their thoughts directly to Peter Nevins, the area dean. He will collect them at that evening, and then those reflections from PCC members will feature a little bit the next day, and I'll come back to that in a moment. So the next day is the formal day of interview. We will interview each of the candidates, obviously individually and formally. They'll each be asked exactly the same questions. We'll agree those questions with you as the parish reps. The parish reps will be able to formulate some questions. I'll work with them to get them right. We'll divvy up the questions so we've all got something. All that will be done before the day of the interview. We'll formally ask all the same questions, but there's the opportunity for supplementary questions off the back of what those responses are to those questions. What we always tend to do at the very beginning of each interview is to hear from the candidate, either with a presentation. So there may be a question that you have. If it was Children and Families Ministry was one of the key things moving forward, you might want to say, well, you know, how would you enable our Children and Families Ministry to grow in the next 2 years? And so we might expect to hear a 5-minute presentation on that, after which then the panel would be able to ask any questions. Alternatively, and this tends to happen a little bit more than the example I've just given, is we would get them to preach a short homily, 5-minute homily on a passage that we would have given them when we told them we were coming to interview. It would often be a lectionary reading, or if there was a particular reading that was particularly pertinent to you as a parish, and that connected with your parish profile or connected with your vision, we would ask them to give a little homily, 5 minutes homily, on that passage and how it connects or reflects with the parish profile. So again, there's an opportunity to hear from them, hear their style of how they might preach and those sorts of things. And then again, we'd ask them some questions off the back of that. Then we'd run through the formal questions, give them an opportunity to ask the panel any questions, and then we'd move on to the next candidate. The candidates would then go once they've been interviewed, and once we've interviewed all the candidates, the interview panel would then begin to deliberate. And what we're looking for as the five of us, we're looking for unity. We're looking for consensus. We're not looking to take a vote. We're discerning, wanting to discern together, you know, what is the Lord saying to us? Often, but not always, often, at least one candidate will rise to the surface quite easily with us. And so on the number I've been on recently, actually, it's been very straightforward to a point. That's not always the case, but we just have to wait and see how it is. So there are we'll talk, hopefully we'll come to some consensus. Let's say that we've arrived at a consensus and the panel think the candidate A is the one that we probably want to appoint. This is where we want to reflect and check out what the PCC members are saying. So it'll be at this point, not earlier, but at this point, the area dean will then just rummage through the emails and let us know the feedback that he's received from the PCC members. And what we do is that's a check-in exercise. So if the panel is saying candidate A, we want to check in that, you know, the PCC reflections are much the same. I was with Archdeacon Paul today and we were just talking about something else. He once had a situation where the panel felt that candidate A was the best candidate, but the consistent reflection from the PCC was, whatever you do, do not appoint candidate A. So they didn't. So it's primarily a check, but it's a really helpful check, and it will feed into our discussions. There are three outcomes of the interview process at that point. The first one is the one that we all hope for, is that there'll be a clear front runner. Someone will rise to the surface, and it will be unanimous, and it will be really straightforward for us. And therefore, on the basis of that, Bishop Andrew would then offer the post to that individual, and I would ring the ones who are not successful. Sometimes there are two people that rise to the surface, and it's very difficult for the panel to decide between two. It doesn't happen very often, but it happens occasionally. And on that basis, if we can't quite, you know, see who it is, then we would probably call both of those, let the others go, but let the other two back for a second interview. And we would work out, as an interview panel, what that second interview would look like. So there's no pro forma for that. We wouldn't go through another formal interview. But it might be that we decide that the both the reps and the bishop would meet with both candidates again. And there may be particular things that we wanted to grill or drill down to with particular candidates. And that would be, give us an opportunity. And therefore, it would then be, hopefully, be able to appoint after that. Of course, the third possibility is that the panel decides that your new clergy person is not in the room on that occasion. And that's a really difficult call. It's particularly difficult for your two parish representatives because they know that you're all back here praying and eagerly waiting, wanting to hear good news. But sometimes it's right not to appoint because experience shows that it's better not to appoint than to appoint the wrong person. As hard as it can be. Doesn't happen very often, but we do it from time to time. If it's that, then we would take a bit of time out, we would check the parish profile, would have a look at the advert again, and then probably in about 4 weeks we'll put the advert back in again. If you've paid for the until field option, you don't have to pay any money to the Church Times, it will go in again, and we'll just run through the whole of the selection process and interview process again until we find the right person. If we are able to find the right person, then you won't hear immediately. What has to happen, we have to coordinate with the parish or the chaplaincy that your new clergy person is coming from, so that announcements are made here and in the parish or chaplaincy that they're leaving at the same time. And often that takes a week or 10 days just to coordinate. So if you have an interview on a Tuesday, you won't hear anything that Sunday, it'll be the following Sunday, just because we have to do that. And there are a couple of other bishop-to-bishop checks that we just need to do. And then, once the announcement is made, you generally have to expect that your new clergy person will have to give 3 months' notice their end before they're able to move. So from the point of interview, assuming we appoint, you're probably looking at about 4 months from that point until your new clergy person has moved in and then there's a licensing service with the bishop. I'm almost done. Let me just tell you what your timeline will be, the timeline that we've worked out. So what we do, we're obviously juggling multiple vacancies at any one time. And in fact, in Dorking Archdeaconry, we've got loads at the moment. I'm dealing with 7 at the moment. And what happens is we go through the process in strict order. So when someone becomes vacant, we start with them, and then we wait to the next one, so that they're all in order, so that we deal with everyone fairly. And so the timeline that we're working from, we always work it backwards, just because of diaries. But for your benefit, I'll work forward. So today is the 14th of September. We're having this meeting. We're hoping very much that Danny Wignall might be able to spend some time with you to begin the parish profile process sometime this month or in October, if that date hasn't already been sorted. We would. The timeline is expecting that by the end of January, you have completed your parish profile. So that gives you about 3 months or so to work out your parish profile, and that sometime in February, a time that you decide, sometime in February you have your Section 11 meeting, which you do those three things if you remember, and then the four Fridays we have in our diaries to advertise would be the 4th, 11th, 18th and 25th of March. So it'd be advertised the whole of March with a closing date for applications on the 1st of April. The shortlisting will take place on the 11th of April, and because Easter's in the way, we will have the interviews on the 3rd of May. So that's the timeline that we're working to. That's the quickest timeline that we can work to, bearing in mind diaries and the other vacancies that come before you, just because people or the parishes have come into vacancy prior to you. I think I've probably said enough. Really happy to take any questions, comments about anything that I've said or anything that you think I haven't said. that I ought to have said. Yes. Yes, we do. That's really helpful. So we will only call for references for those that we shortlist. We don't want to waste people's time. And we do DBS checks and safeguarding checks. I talked about a bishop-to-bishop reference. So it's a confidential reference between bishop-to-bishop, just making sure that there aren't any things that we need to be aware of in terms of their conduct over the years. So yes, we do all that in between shortlisting, and the interview panel will see all those references. They won't see the bishop-to-bishop conversation, but they'll see everything else, yeah. All due diligence is done.
I have a question.
Sorry, I can't hear you.
Those of us who are not on the parish council, how will we know about what is going on? Obviously, you've given us the key dates, but how will we know, have the feedback of how things are progressing, or will it all be kept sort of fairly quiet until we have to...
Yep, so the question is, how will those who are not on the PCC, I guess the wider community of faith, how will they know about the process and where we are and how things are going? Well, it'll be possible for the PCC to give regular updates really to the congregation about how the profile is coming together. Once you've had your Section 11 meeting, it'll be really important to let the wider community know, you know, that you've done that. You could even have one here so people can have a look at it. And you want to say you've advertised, you maybe even have a copy of the advert up, and who your two parish reps are. In terms of when we get to the shortlisting, we need to keep things quite tight confidentially. So we won't, and the parish reps won't be able to tell you either how many applicants there were, how many we've shortlisted, how many are interviewing, although of course on the day you'll see how many are being interviewed. But we won't be able to give information out about candidates or anything like that. That's to protect their identity. And often you see, you'll have to realise that when clergy are looking for a post, they do so without their current parish knowing anything about it. And so therefore we need to honour that, so that, you know, the Christian world sometimes is quite a small world. And therefore, what we don't want to do is enable someone who's applying, whether they're shortlisted or not, for their home parish to know that they're looking for another job, because that will only create great uncertainty and anxiety. So at the point of shortlisting and beyond interview and that, anything that happens in a shortlisting room or an interview room will never be divulged outside of those for confidentiality reasons. But there's no reason why the PCC can't keep people up to speed throughout the process. Yeah, Libby, and then I'll come over to you, sir.
I've got a question from Simon.
Yep. Yeah, no, so we will drive the process. So I think I've already been in touch with Danny, and he will be in touch if he hasn't been already. And I mentioned Sarah Bolton. She will continue to be your key contact in many ways. But I, as I say, I will be happily involved, and I will want to look at the draft profile and advert. And I'm here all the way for any questions that anybody has, and no matter how silly they might feel. No, so we will drive it. But you will have to decide when you're ready to have your Section 11 meeting. It just you need to have that at least 2 weeks, really, before the 4th of March, just to enable us to have agreed the advert, got it to the Church Times early enough in order that they can get it in for the 4th of March. So those are just some of the key. But we'll work very closely with you. Sir?
Can I just ask, is it the diocese's intention to replace Alan's Rock, if that's happened, on a like-for-like basis?
So, yes, what we're looking for is a new full-time stipendiary minister in the same way that Alan is. I will say there is one very slight difference. So if you're on the PCC, you may or may not know that Bishop Andrew is minded to what we call, it's a legal term, suspend the parish. What that means is that there's the possibility of having, in due course, conversations around pastoral reorganisation. Now, some of you may be aware that I've already been involved in conversations with wardens at Westcott, and indeed with wardens at Abinger and Cold Harbour, Homebury, St Mary and Wootton, about the possibility of forming a united benefice of all five parishes. And where we've got to at a meeting on the 18th of August, just over there, was that it was felt that now is not the right time to pursue that particular possibility. What was voiced at that meeting very clearly, which was a great joy, was everyone from all the church wardens from the five parishes said, but we intentionally want to work more closely together, because we recognise that we're stronger together than we are working all on our own, duplicating things. So that was great to hear. So that doesn't that doesn't change the appointment either here or indeed at Abinger and Cold Harbour. What it does mean, however, is that there is a slight legal difference, that Alan is the incumbent of the parish. Incumbent is a legal word. Vicar is not a legal word, but that's the common parlance. If, and it's Bishop Andrew's decision, if he decides to suspend the parish, it means that he suspends the right of the patron to choose the next incumbent or the next minister, and it reverts to the bishop. Now, it's the same one in this case, so I know it seems a bit strange. But in those such situations, you can't appoint an incumbent, you appoint a priest in charge, who in every way is the same as a vicar. So it won't make any difference to the mission ministry here. They won't be Alan, but, you know, it won't make any difference. Did you say to me on Thursday that you were the priest in charge when you first arrived? I think you did, didn't you?
Speaking to this thing.
Yeah, I was on a five, six-year licence when I first came as a priest in charge. It wasn't really a problem. It was, just fine.
So it's a technical thing, and all the suspension does, all it means is that once we've got a new minister here and a new minister at Abinger and Cold Harbour, you know, once we've got their feet under the table a bit, then it will be another opportunity to have further conversations, to think about the possibility, and I stress possibility, the possibility and options of maybe some pastoral reorganisation. So we'll pick up those conversations that we've begun. We felt it was, the church wants to feel it was better to do that with ministers, new ministers in place than before, and that's absolutely fine. It's not a fait accompli. If at that point, 2 years, 3 years' time, we decide, no, we're not wanting to do anything, then that's fine. The suspension would be lifted, and then the person here and the person at Abinger and Cold Harbour would then essentially become the incumbent. So it makes a difference. It doesn't put people off advertising, because we have to advertise for a priest in charge or an incumbent. It doesn't put people off. There are many places that advertise priest in charge. All it means is that there's the possibility of some reorganisation. Yes. Any options would be on the table. So, we can dream dreams. All sorts of options about pastoral reorganisation. Essentially, what we're wanting to do, clearly, is to enable every parish to thrive and to grow. And what suspension does, it gives us the opportunity to enter into those conversations, to explore together with you on the ground. Nothing will happen and be top-down, because we need your agreement. We'll work on this together, as I've tried to do in the conversations that we've had to date. It'll be saying, how can we, best ensure that in the short, medium, and long term, that the parishes, the churches can flourish, that ministry and mission can grow, the kingdom of God can grow and develop in this place. Do we need to think about, reorganizing that in order that we can ensure the flourishing of the church is going forward? And so any option is on the table, or there'll be no option. So, we could look in any particular direction. What the suspension means, it just gives us the opportunity to do that, whereas if you're not suspended, we can't do that. Sorry? No, there are no. Pastoral reorganisation means essentially joining other parishes with other parishes, the possibility of changing parish boundaries, all sorts of things. So, you know, the thing that's been talked about most recently is the possibility of a united benefice with Abinger and Cold Harbour and Wootton and Homebury. The thought was that there'd be one incumbent, which would be based here, but would be the incumbent of all those five parishes. There's a House for David Grundy's the House for Duty priest already at Wootton and Homebury St Mary. We're going to be shortly in the process of appointing a House for Duty person at Abinger and Cold Harbour. So identifiable ministry and mission teams, and with an incumbent here. So that was one of the options, and that may still be an option, but it may not be an option. The other option could be, I don't know, that we look in other directions. I don't know. But anything's on the table, and it would be done together. It won't come down from on high. That's not the way that we or I operate. I'll come to you in a minute. I think it's 7 I'll have shortly, but they're all timetabled. Don't worry, I'll get it done. I won't be a bottleneck. It's as simple as that. There's lots of other stuff to do on top, but that's fine. I'll do it. Don't worry. Yes, it would do. It would say priest in charge. Incumbent. And obviously, if you are suspended, then part of the parish profile would need to talk a little bit about some of the conversations that we've already had. So it just enables any person to be aware of some conversations that have happened. Not that it ties their hands or anybody else's hands, but it's just helpful that they can see what some of the thinking has been. I would probably include a little bit about that in my letter that goes there. Because I think, If there is going to be some pastoral reorganisation, it's really important for any new minister here to know that could be on the cards. And there may be some people who come with that experience, thinking, if we talked about a united benefice or working more closely with those other four parishes just down the road, there might be some people who have got a huge amount of experience in that and love doing that, for whom it could be the right fit here. It still wouldn't automatically mean that's what would happen here. But do you see what I mean? It's just really important to be as transparent as possible for any potential candidate. Because what you don't want to do is get a candidate here and say, 6 months in, do you know, this job doesn't relate much to the parish profile or the parish I thought I was applying to. So it's really important that it's true and honest, that you're transparent. If there are challenges, if there are difficulties, then to include that. Clergy really respect that and warm to that. Sorry? Yes.
So the appointment process, let's say a priest in charge is appointed.
Yes.
What happens if for any number of reasons, and I think we've all probably seen appointed to roles, and for one reason or another they've just kind of not worked out, any number of reasons. Let's just say the person who's appointed
then
says after 6 months, actually, it's kind of almost got for me.
Yep.
What happens then?
Well, I'm hoping that they, I mean, let's hope that doesn't happen. It doesn't happen very often. I would hope that they would say that to me. So once someone's been appointed, I have a meeting with them 3 months in, which is a check-in meeting just to see how they're doing. That 3 months after that, they have a meeting with Bishop Joe, in this instance, again to check in. So we hope, if it's not working, that they will begin to speak about that. And we would talk to them about that, obviously. And if we felt then they would probably look to apply for somewhere else and look for another job, and then you'd go back into to vacancy. Yeah, you can't. There isn't a no. Once you're in, you're in until the person says that they're going and they resign. Absolutely, unless you're like an interim minister. But we're not having an interim. You know, there are very few licenses that can be time ended. Libby, and then.
A quick question about suspension again.
Yes.
Who decides whether it's being suspended?
Does anyone else get to say? Yeah. So it's Bishop Andrew's decision. But he consults. So because we're thinking of suspending here and the other four parishes, each of the PC secretaries have received a letter some time ago saying that Bishop Andrew's minded or thinking about it, and he'd like to hear their reflections. The area dean will have an opportunity to reflect as well. Bishop's Council met last night and discussed it as well. And then once that consultation period is ended, any consultation that is received goes into Bishop Andrew, and then Bishop Andrew decides it's entirely his gift, and then he will then either suspend or not suspend.
And when will we know that? Because that affects Brighton, the parish profile.
No, not really. So I think it's a 28-day consultation period. I think yours ends around the very end of this month or the beginning of next. It's very close, so it won't in any way impinge on anything that we've said. Yes, and I'll come to you, sir.
On your explanation of the timeline.
Yes.
I know you can't put a figure on it, but you're talking about seven vacancies you're dealing with yourself. Is it likely that, in your experience, the final completion of putting bigger priest incumbent in that position is going to take something like 9 months to a year?
Yeah, that's normally what it would take, on average. So we just do it as quickly as we possibly can. But as I said, there's a process, legal process, that takes a bit of time if we're going to get it right. But often, yes, the vacancy process takes about nine months plus.
In this situation, it's not likely to be less than 9 months,
is it? It'll be, so if we said we appoint in May, then we'd hope someone might be inducted around August. So yeah, so it'll be about 9 months by the time Alan has formally resigned. So that's about right. Sir?
Excuse me. Is there opportunity for candidates outside of the Anglican Christian Church to be asked to be off the German board for the role?
No. They need to be...
I'm aware they would join the Anglican Church once they start. If they're outside
currently. No, so they need to be in Anglican orders, we call it. So they need to be a Church of England priest. They could, however, be a priest in the Anglican Communion. So, for example, St. Mary's Yule is in vacancy at the moment. The closing date is tomorrow. And we've received an application from someone who's living thousands of miles away, but is in an Anglican set up in a different country, so he's perfectly able to apply. They need to be in Anglican orders.
Not really a technical question, but I just wondered whether you've got any particular word for us as a church as we begin this process. So I'm conscious that we are quite a broad church, and there will be people who will have different opinions from one another, different priorities, different perspectives, and obviously unity and seeking to discern where the Lord is leading us is priority at this time. So I just wondered whether, drawing on your own understanding, your own experience, whether there's anything particular that you would say to us as a church and how we enable that to happen.
It's a really great question. I'd encourage you to pray together. Pray and talk together. And enable different people's voices to be heard Now, some of that will have to be filtered and sifted. You can't put everything in, can you? But I think it's really important that the parish profile that you end up with, that the vast, vast majority of people can say, yeah, this is a great document. You can't please everybody. But, so I'd encourage you to pray like mad and to keep talking to each other and listening to each other as you put that together. And be real, be real. So there was it doesn't apply here, but there was a church recently that had some real difficulties, and they were not wanting to put those difficulties in. And I said, no, you need to put those difficulties in. You need to let people know the history. And the clergy that I, often clergy will ring me up before they apply. Lots of them will ring me up to get the archdeacon's view on it. Is there anything that I should know that isn't in the profile? I always get asked that question. I always say, but that just tells you, doesn't it? It shows you that that hasn't always been the case in the past. And on that particular one, often the people that phoned me said, I was so pleased that they put that in. And it didn't prevent anybody from applying, and we've appointed in really, really well. So I think honesty, prayer, and keep talking together. That's the most thing I would say, Libby. Yes. Yeah, thank you for reminding me. Yes, so just on where we are with the current site, the planning permission went in last week, and the council have acknowledged that it's gone in and they've taken the diocese's money, so the process has begun there, so that's really good. So the plan is, clearly, the new vicarage will not be built by the time we make the appointment, assuming we make an appointment next year, as we hope to. And so we have a vicarage that will be vacant. It's being rented out at the moment in Ashcombe Road in Dorking, which I think is not very far away. And so the plan is that we will house the incumbent there until, or the priest in charge, and if it's suspended, until the new vicarage is ready. What that will be... So that will work. That works very well. It also means that the new priest will be here on site and will be able to be involved in some of the cosmetic stuff around the vicarage. So that will be a great benefit for them as well, in a way that often that isn't the case. So that's the plan for housing your new priest.
And did you say that there are going to be five people on the interview panel?
That's correct. Well, you've got your two parish representatives. So the five people, but it's helpful you say, five people on the interview panel is Bishop Joe, myself, Peter Nevins, and your two parish representatives from your PCC that you've agreed at your Section 11 meeting who they're going to be. But that leads me on to say something that I haven't said, which is really important. You might think that's a bit unfair, because you might think, well, we've got three people from the diocese versus two people from the parish. But I can assure you that what we do in this diocese, the diocese, or Bishop Andrew or me, will never insist that your new priest is the person unless your parish representatives agree. We will never put in place somebody who your reps do not think is the best match, period. So there is more sort of power, decision power, if you like, in your two reps than there is in the other three of us. There is, however, a veto from the bishop if the parish reps want someone that the bishop or I doesn't think is right. I've never seen that happen. Just occasionally you see the bishop is aware of information that no one else is aware of. So you will not be overridden. The parish reps are the ones that we will listen to most, because after all, they're parish reps. They live and breathe this place. They know it far better than we will. But we'll bring a different an outside perspective, which can be helpful. But you will never get someone that your parish reps have not fully signed up to.
Ideally, you said you want consensus anyway.
Absolutely. I've been here for almost 2 years, and been on quite a number of vacancies already. There's always been consensus, and actually, generally, it hasn't been difficult to reach that consensus. Yes?
What's the sort of marketplace like? Sorry, I don't know. What's the appetite?
Thank you.
Yes. The unemployment level. What was the appetite out there? What's your feel? Are we an attractive site?
I think you're a very attractive site. Yeah. Very attractive site. I think you've got a huge amount going for you as a parish. And I'm not just saying that because Alan and Jenny are here. And I'm not just saying that because it's a nice thing for you to hear. I genuinely think that this parish is in a very good place in the midst of some very difficult times. And I think, there's a reality and there's an honesty about that, which is refreshing and is real. And the Lord is here. I think people will be very eager to apply. So I think you're a very attractive proposition, if you like. In terms of what's the market like, I think the market's in a really good place, actually. You'll probably realize that over much of COVID, certainly Guildford and many other dioceses stopped appointing and recruiting. We started again last autumn. And since then, we've found there have generally been lots of applicants, sometimes 12 plus, and even one down the road recently, much more than that. So I feel pretty confident that you'll get lots of applicants. I'd be amazed if you didn't. And there are some churches that are just known. And although I'd never been here until, I don't know when it was, a while ago, I'd always heard of Holy Trinity Westcott. So, that's just a factor. And so I think, there are lots of people who are looking. And I think, I genuinely, honestly think that you'd be very attractive. So I think, yeah. Whether the right person is there the first time round, well, pray God they are, but we'll have to wait and see. Any other thoughts or questions or comments? Go for it.
Westcott had its first church at St John's, which was part of the Cancer Health Union Connection. That has since become a church hall for the community. Is there likely to be a new church that the community has tended to be? Because you really have a whole village approach.
So I'm not quite sure that I understand your question, sorry.
The other half of the village?
Yes.
Didn't come to church here, they went to other church.
I see, right. Okay, well, I mean, I think that's something that you'll need to reflect in your parish profile about some of the history, really, and the way that you as a community of faith are seeking to reach the whole parish and the whole village. And I know that you're seeking to do that in a whole variety of ways. There may be new ways that you dream of, and I think it'd be really important to include those in the profile as well. I hope that helps. Okay, well, I'll hang around for a little bit if anyone wants to have a quick word, but we've probably gone on long enough. I don't know what the time is. I'll get that newsletter to you, so it may be available this Sunday. I'll see how people want to do that. Absolutely pledge my support and service of you through this time in any shape or form. And I look forward very much to being here on Christmas Eve and Christmas morning, actually, if not before. Sure. Shall